So the title of the talk today is Deep Roots. Deep Roots. And if you can't hear me or understand, please feel free at any point to move closer or to raise your hand and ask me to repeat or explain. So a kind of a deep reflection for me in recent months has been inspiration. The power of it in my life, the effect it has had on my life. And I've been asking myself, and it's something that I'd like us to explore together tonight, what is inspiration? Kind of one of those words that we hear and we think we're familiar with. It's something that we all feel. We feel inspired. And I have a sense that what it really does is to move us, to motivate us. It's like a real big source of energy. But I've also found it interesting to really look in when I feel inspired and see what is actually happening, how it's actually affecting. What is it in me that is being inspired, that is being touched? Sometimes I have this image of a magic wand, you know, like in a cartoon when you go whoosh and all these stars come out. So a magic wand, which is kind of touching my heart. And I feel that when that happens to all of us, it kind of wakes the heart up. It wakes our being up. It reminds us that we're alive. And something in us responds, recognizes that message. And it's almost like an echo with a heartbeat. I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive. Six years ago, I was here in Sarnath, and it was a couple of days before the end of the program. Christopher was sitting here about to give a talk, and I had just made an announcement, I don't remember what it was, and I was walking out. And I was walking out because I was about to get on a train and go to central India, to a leprosy community, which I just mentioned, for the first time. And I have this memory, I think, so strongly because it's one of those moments that, without realizing, are a moment just before something big happens. And Nathan and I went, and we met a man, and we met a place. And this man's name was Baba Amte. He was 92, or 90. He was 90 at that time. And he was surrounded by his life's work, which was this huge community of people with disabilities, most of them people with leprosy. And he was the kind of man that was really honored by everyone around him as someone very brave and very strong and very special. He was the kind of man that if he wanted something and went on a hunger strike. The chief minister of Maharashtra flew in on a helicopter the next day. He was that kind of person. And he told us when we were there the story of why, of what made him who he was. And I'd like to share his story. And so we're kind of going back in time to when he was a young man, about 30. And he'd already done many things. He was a colleague and a friend of Gandhi, a follower of Gandhi, and he'd participated in the fight for India's freedom, and he'd been a sadhu, a holy man, for many, many years. And he was working with low-caste people, helping them to gain rights and dignity. And he had a wife and two young sons. And he was walking home one night in the dark, and it was raining. So if we can imagine a few days ago what it's like here in India, dark, raining, muddy, very muddy. And somehow, as he was walking, he saw a pile of rags. He thought it was just a pile of old cloth on the road. And he decided to look closer at that for some reason. And when he looked closer, when he bent down and looked, he saw it was a human being. It was a man. His name was Tulsiram. And this man was dying from wounds created by leprosy. He had maggots in the wounds, he was infected. He was clearly at the end of his life, just lying there in the rain, in the mud. And Baba realized what this was, a man dying of leprosy, and he just stood up, turned his back, and ran home as fast as he could, as quickly as he could. He was so afraid. He was so afraid of this image of this man dying from a terrible disease. And then he tells that he couldn't sleep all night. All night he lay in his bed and he could not sleep. Because he could feel that he could run away from the source of his fear. He could run away from that man. But he couldn't run away from the fear. The fear was there. And so by the morning, he decided to go back. And so he went back and he built a shelter and he looked after Tulsiram until he died a few weeks later. And this is late 1940s in India. There was no cure for leprosy at that time in the world anywhere. Didn't exist. No, any kind of treatment. So his fear was very real, we could say. His fear for himself, for what would happen if he would carry the disease and infect his wife, his children, was very real. And so he always used to say, you know, people have this image of me, of being this great saint, of doing this out of love for others. And he said, yeah, there's also love, but what was there was wanting to face my own fear fully. And whenever I kind of feel into this story, into this life and everything that grew from it, I'm really amazed at that very simple starting point. Just the simple courage to really see himself. I am afraid. And being with that. Not trying to hide behind my own self-image. No, I mean, I'm fearless. Everyone knows that. So not trying to hide behind the self-image or the idea of what I should be, but just, yes, I am afraid. And I think that's something that we really meet in our lives all the time. The voices that pull us out of our actual experience. So I'm giving a talk here. I should be saying something that you find worthwhile, for example. I don't think I'd give much of a talk if I kind of just let that run around my head all the time. Or I'm a good person. I'm a caring person. So I shouldn't be feeling selfish or jealous or mean. And so it really feels like what this story inspires me to is really just starting from that basic ground of where I am. And then moving from that. So also not getting caught up in, oh, you know, I'm a fearful person, that's terrible. Or I'm a fearful person, that's okay, and I'll just kind of let that be my image now. But facing the truth as it is, and then moving towards those limitations. Not stopping. Letting ourselves grow and expand towards where we feel our limits are. I've had another very inspiring encounter recently. It's quite different. And so this was on our on the Sangha Seva Being Peace work retreat in Israel and Palestine, where we harvest olives with Palestinian farmers and we support and meet with Israeli and Palestinian peace activists. And we work a lot with an organization called Rabbis for Human Rights. And so we went to meet one of the leaders of the organization in their office to kind of get a overview of their work and the situation and what's going on. How many people here ever met a Jewish rabbi? You can raise your hand. Yeah. Okay. How many people have a sense of what a Jewish rabbi looks like? It's just a stereotype, but it's fun. So he really fits that. This sweet, middle-aged, chubby guy with kind of curly, scraggly hair and, you know, family man. Australian accent when he spoke English, also when he spoke Hebrew. Very sweet, very ordinary, just a normal human being. And he was telling us about the work they were being involved in, and they had just had a big success, a big legal victory in the High Court, in the Supreme Court in Israel. They had succeeded in stopping the demolition of a Palestinian school building, which was illegally built because in many Palestinian villages there's no possibility of getting building permission, so buildings are built illegally. And he was sharing this feeling of joy with us that, you know, we made it, this all this work and this great result, the school is still there and the children have somewhere to go to every day. And then he said, still fully in that sense of appreciation, and I know that I saved, that we saved this school building. And I know that what this means is that a different building in a different village somewhere will get demolished. I know that because I know how the system works. I know that they have a quota, a budget. And so if one building is saved, another will be destroyed. And he said that sometimes he feels like the little Dutch boy in this story that many people have probably heard, who just stands there and puts his finger in the hole in the dam to save his village from flooding. So he just stays there with the finger in the hole in the dam until help comes. Only in Yechiel's dam, there's many, many holes. But he's still there, putting his fingers in as many holes as he can. And when we were talking within our group afterwards about this meeting, someone said how amazing it was to her just to meet somebody who can look at reality in that way. See the reality, not a pretty picture. The way things are, injustice, suffering. Know what he can do and what he cannot do also. And yet, as someone said in one of the groups a few days ago, just keep doing the next right thing. Just keep doing the next right thing. So not getting disheartened, but somehow having the ability to get up again and again and keep going. Do the next right thing, not needing to know that his actions will be successful or not. Hoping they will, praying they will. And the sense I had from meeting people like him and others is of someone connected to something deeper in life. Something that isn't influenced so much by what is going on the surface. Like a very deep lake. And the wind can go on the top and the waves go in this direction or the other, but the depth is untouched. And I feel that what inspires us when we hear this is this connection, that this connection is possible. And I feel for myself that what it inspires me to is to find that, to find that connection in my life, in our lives, for all of us. I spent about a year and a half living in the very, very southern part of Israel, which is extreme, extreme desert. In fact, Nathan, who grew up in England, which is not a desert at all, the first times he came to Israel and we would just drive through the desert, he would always just fall asleep completely. Like, it's such a desert, like, no any kind of sensory impact. I would be like, it's so beautiful, it's so great, and he'd like... So, poor thing, he's always the butt of my jokes. So, one of the amazing things in this extreme desert is the life that's there. You know, you look and there's just rocks and whatever, and then you look closer and there's life. You have to look closely. And most of the life that's there relies on dew, on this moisture that comes in the mornings, or on the very, very, very rare rainfall. Maybe it rains once a year, and very little. So most of the plant life is very, very small, very low down, twiggy, scraggly, you know, having a really hard time kind of plants. But there's one kind of tree which grows quite a lot. And I remember a friend explaining to me that this tree has such a strong root, just one main root, that can go down hundreds of meters. And it has such vitality. It's so strong, this urge to grow, that this friend of mine who was a farmer, if he found one of these growing in his field, he'd be digging it out with bulldozers because it would just take over from everything else. And the groundwater, the deep water in this area, it can be 400 meters deep. Like really, 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 really deep. But this tree makes it. It grows. And it's not just one, you know, you see a lot of them around. And that again says to me that it's possible. Nathan told me the other day that even the alfalfa seed, which is a tiny little seed like this big, also has a capacity to grow a root hundreds of meters. So, I think we can too grow our roots. So, what happens with inspiration? And again, looking in. We hear something and we feel something opening, or we see something and we feel something opening, and then what? So as we're all very creative beings, we can do all kinds of things with that energy. Remember one friend telling me of sitting their first retreat in Bodh Gaya and hearing the story of the Buddha's enlightenment and feeling so touched, so inspired just by that steady determination and commitment to sit all night, to sit as long as it took under the tree. And so that friend was like, right, where's a good tree to sit under? And I also heard it happened on a moonlit night, so a full moon night. So when's the next, looking through the calendar, when's the next full moon? And where's the right tree? And should I look for that it says in the text, a specific kind of grass that the Buddha sat on. So we all do that, you know, we feel inspired by something and we immediately, well, not all of us, but some of us like me, try and copy the form. So liberation has to happen in the same conditions as it did for the Buddha, which pretty much means that it's impossible for us, because there's no way we could copy someone else's conditions exactly. And so it's really about finding the essence, finding our way to that essence, that fire which got someone else going, in whichever way it then manifested in their lives. So I feel more that when inspiration is true for us, it's like a light. It shows us a way in. It reminds us of our own potential, of our own ability, of our own possibility. And so when we really let whatever inspires us and touches us in, it can help us grow these deep roots that we so desperately need and wish for. And so it's kind of feels like it's kind of working in two directions at least, probably a lot more. Feeling who we are and where we are. Being fully ourselves and comfortable within our own skin. And also knowing what we can be. Knowing what we wish to be in our deepest heart. So it kind of feels like we're kind of really small and really big at the same time. And I'd like to read a short piece of writing by a French man who was in the resistance during World War II in France and got caught by the SS and sent to a concentration camp. And this is a short piece that he writes about his experience there. And he says, "When death is present every minute, when all those we love disappear, when humanness vanishes, when no concrete reason any longer exists, nor a single sensible reason to hope, then an immediate refuge is necessary, an all-powerful refuge. And that is faith. A kind of faith is necessary that has its roots in our very being, that in time has become our very self. In other words, an experience is necessary. I had encountered that experience. I knew that when the light was taken from me, I could bring it to life again in myself. I knew that when love was taken away from me, its spring would flow again in myself. I even knew that when life is at stake, it is possible to find its source within oneself. I know that these explanations may seem abstract, but for me they were not. Every time the sight and the smells and the tests, the trials of the camp became unbearable, I closed myself off from the world. I entered a refuge, a safe place, where the SS could not reach me. I directed my gaze towards that inner light which I had seen when I was 8 years old. I let it swing through me. And quickly I made the discovery that that light was life, that it was love. Now I could again open my eyes and my nose and my ears to the death and the misery. I survived them. So that inner light, which we can let swing through us, move through us, resonate within us fully. A light that allows us to face all of life, even the most horrible, difficult aspects of it, manifestations of it, and to survive. And I'm sure it's clear to all of us, he's not just speaking of physical survival. To survive as a full human being. So we're reminded to keep nurturing and growing our capacity to make full contact with life. And also we're reminded of the value of our own experience. That we can find inspiration not just outside of ourselves, but also within. And in many very ordinary everyday situations. And it feels like this kind of gathering is a great opportunity to be inspired and also to inspire others in so many small ways. Just the sharings in the groups sometimes, the honesty, the courage, the beauty that we see in each other. Or just maybe sitting in a chai shop with some other people, chatting about this and that. And then someone gets up and says, I'm going to go to the meditation hall now. And maybe that makes us really connect and check within ourselves. But what do I want to do now? Like a little wake-up call. What do I want to do now? What's right for me? What's true for me? When I was sitting here at the morning sitting today and I was feeling how nice it is just to sit here and hear people coming in. Those first, should be 5, but more like 15 minutes of the sitting. When you hear people kind of coming in and settling into their seats, their postures, their cushions. And just how precious that is. We're all coming in here to do the same thing. Coming in to go in. Or sometimes in the hall, lost in thought, and someone coughs. And yeah, it can be irritating sometimes. But also it can bring us back. Ah, I'm not alone here, actually, or I'm not off somewhere having a discussion with my mother. I'm here. And so are all these other people, and we're all doing this. Why? Let's feel into that. I was even reflecting today that it's possible to be inspired by a gulab jamun. I hope everyone knows very experientially what a gulab jamun is. And if you don't, the sweet shop just across the road from the gate to the Thai monastery makes amazing ones. And you can ask them when they'll have a fresh batch because they're really great. So even being able, even a gulab jamun can be inspiring when it's kind of really hot, fresh, perfect. And we eat it, it's like, ah, life can be this good. It can. And if we find out the fresh batch is going to be ready at 9 o'clock, it might even inspire us to come to the evening program. And also in our very own personal experience, moments of inspiration, which are so valuable. When we feel stillness, or just that sense of the mind slowly settling down. When we have a moment of clarity or insight. When we do something kind for someone else. When we feel open or at ease. And it feels that actually this is the most valuable kind of inspiration because it's undeniable. I have experienced this. It is possible for me. Whatever anybody else tells me, whatever my own mind tells me, I have experienced this. I know this. Liberation is not a once-in-a-universe happening. It hasn't just happened to that guy over there in all of history. It can happen to us. It can be a beautiful mantra. It can happen to me. Inspiration shows itself in many ways, continually reminding us to keep on walking, to keep on digging our roots. Sometimes it's a very clear instruction. Sometimes it just indicates a direction. And sometimes it's like a poem that we really need to chew and digest for ourselves. Whatever it is for us today, for each of us today, right now, I feel that it is so drenched, steeped, absorbed in love. It's not another should, another voice telling us what we're doing wrong. It's a voice that's telling us what we're doing right and what we can do right. It's an invitation to let our roots keep digging. An invitation to join that movement of life into life. So let's have a few quiet minutes together.